Last Sunday, an episode of McQuestion TV aired, as it does every Sunday on PBS/KRA Channel 13 at 11:30 a.m. This episode was the second part of a two-part series about lying and why we lie. While the first part focused on the neuroscience of lying, this second part focused on the psychology of lying and the implications. The episode was hosted and moderated by Jim Cathcart, and the guests were Professor Christian Hart, a professor of psychology at Texas Woman's University and the director of the Human Deception Laboratory, and myself. In this episode, we covered issues such as, does everyone lie? Are there cultural differences that lead to more or less lying? Do salespeople lie? And if they do, why do we still buy from them? What is the relationship between confidence and trust? Is magic considered lying? And why do we accept lying? Is confirmation bias a type of lying? What are the consequences of lying? Can you tell when someone is lying to you? Can you behave in a way that would cause someone else to lie to you? And more. This was a very insightful episode, and I thought it would be interesting for you to listen to it, so I asked and got permission to incorporate it as is here in my podcast. I would encourage you to start watching McQuestion TV episodes. You can find them on www.mcquestiontv.com. Don't worry, I will post a link in the description of this episode. But for now, here is the episode, just as it was aired, right after this. Welcome to The Trust Show. I'm Yoram Solomon, your host, the author of The Book of Trust, and facilitator of the Trust Habits Workshop. My mission is simple. I want to help you form habits that build your trustworthiness, because the answer to this question will have the biggest impact on your personal and professional success or failure. Can I trust you?
Are you kidding me? Says who? How do you know that? These are all questions we ask to test someone's truth in their words. We want to know if they're lying or if we can rely on what they say. As it turns out, everyone lies, but not all the time. This is part two of a two-part program on why people lie, the science, psychology, and consequences. Today, we'll explore how to know when people lie and what to do about it. Joining me are Dr. Christian Hart, professor of psychology at Texas Women's University and director of the Human Deception Laboratory, and researcher Dr. Yoram Solomon, author of The Book of Trust and host of The Trust Show podcast. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to have you here. Well, we've been exploring this a little bit in a previous program, and I know based on what I've learned from both of you in our conversations, there's a lot more still to explore. So let's dive right in. Chris, what got you interested in lying as a subject in the first place?
Well, I think my interest in lying really comes from the idea that we are raised with moral prohibitions against lying. We hear about that from our parents and our relatives. We hear it at school. Lying is wrong. Lying is bad. No one should ever lie. But when we look at the facts, we find that almost everyone lies. In fact, if we track participants for 3 months, what we find is that 99% of them report that they've lied at least once, and usually more often than that. So I'm really interested in this idea that as a society, we have this agreement, this moral prohibition against lying. It is something that everyone does. And so looking at that tension between those two ideas is really intriguing to me.
And your book is Big Liar?
That's correct.
Wow. There's so many facets to it covered in that book, and there's so much research behind all that. I want to explore that with you further. Yoram, when we look at your transition from Israel, where you grew up and you served in the military, and then became a citizen of the United States, have you noticed in the different cultures, not just those two, but other cultures, lying has different rules or different protocols from one to the next?
I did. And as you said, it's not necessarily just Israel versus U.S. Israel, for example, is considered a very direct culture. We say what we think, and there's a little less fear of the consequences. Here, the U.S., I don't know if you knew that 80% of the world's lawyers live here in the U.S.
80%.
That was actually the topic of my first TED Talk. And one of the things that we do here is we're so afraid of telling what it is because we might get sued that we stick to what we want you to think. And I see that in multiple aspects of life.
So in other countries, and I know you've traveled a lot, in other countries, do you find that the dynamic is profoundly different or just slightly different or what?
It's different, and it's different in both aspects. It's different in the willingness or avoidance of lying, but also on how we react to lying. For example, I remember having a Japanese client. This is when I was here in the U.S., and you couldn't lie to them because they would not accept that this is even a possibility. They would keep on drilling because you said in an email from 3 months and 3 days ago, you said that this, and now you're saying something slightly different. So there are differences, cultural differences in our willingness or avoidance of lying, but also on how we react to it.
Well, I want to go back to you because you did a study of a town in Romania.
Yes, it wasn't my study, but it's a study that we covered in our book.
Tell us about it.
Well, so there's this small village in Romania, and it's really a remarkable village and has been studied quite a bit by anthropologists. And the reason is that there is so little trust between the inhabitants of this village that all of society operates a little differently than what we're accustomed with in the United States. And it's to the point that everybody has a small select handful of people they're willing to trust, and everyone else is seen as a danger or a threat or someone who might try and take advantage of them. And it's such a problem that in one case, two people were inhabiting a building and they distrusted each other so much that they took the building apart and created two smaller buildings. They're unwilling to trust someone enough to share a building space with them.
Wow.
If I can add one thing to that, Robin Dunbar was a British anthropologist, and he did research on the volume of our brain compared to other species. And what he found was that our brain gives us the ability to trust a certain amount of people, a certain number of people. So we trust fewer people to a larger extent. We trust more people to think about your Facebook friends, 4,000 Facebook. Yeah. Do you really trust all of them?
Yeah.
And the question that I know that I like to ask in my workshops is, who can you trust to help you hide a body? So different cultures, different areas, that distribution between the level of high level of trust that you can put in very small number of people to a very low level of trust in a very large number of people.
But it seems if we were to take this personally, it would be scary to go out every day for fear that everybody's lying to you. And you develop sort of a cynical mindset, not just skeptical, but beyond that, to cynicism, and think, well, I can't trust anybody. What do you say about that?
Well, I think to operate as a society, we are essentially cooperating. We are collaborating. It's almost impossible for us to even survive if we're operating on our own. So we have to make ourselves vulnerable. We have to place trust in people. And to Yoram's point, what's important is, and what varies, is how many people we can trust.
Mm-hmm.
I think fortunately for most of us, we've identified a large number of people we can trust. And we trust them initially because we have what we call a truth default. We assume most people are being honest with us unless they show us otherwise. But in some contexts, people are a little bit more adversarial. For example, if you're trying to sell me a car, we have different interests. You want to sell the car for as much as you can. I want to pay as little as I can. And so when we find that we're at odds with each other, then we start to be a little more mistrustful or distrustful.
And that gets into the way sales training has been practiced over the years. Because at the beginning, in the early days, it was all about make them buy. And in recent years, there's been a lot of emphasis on customers for life, you know, cultivating a long-term relationship.
You know, I think I wish I would have seen more of that, because I think that a lot of companies, a lot of salespeople are missing that point of people are actually willing to buy. I'm involved in research right now that I call Trust Premium. What I found was that almost 100% of people would buy from you and not from somebody they don't know because they trust you. 100% if you sell for the same price. But they're willing to even pay you a higher price for being trusted. And I feel that companies and salespeople are missing that part. I think one of the things that's happening right now is the level of spam and scam calls that you get are going through the roof. I used to ask the question, what country do you think generates the most spam or scam? It's not Russia. It's not Iran. It's not South Korea. It's the United States of America generating 8.2 billion spam emails per day. A large percentage of them trying to sell you something you don't need. A large percentage of them are not even trying to sell you. They're just trying to steal money from you, identity theft, and so on. Under this environment, you can't trust anyone who calls you.
Now, you did a study, or you do an exercise with your audiences where you have them rank themselves on a lying scale or a trust scale. What, tell us about that.
So it's different. It's different aspects of trust. I have a model of trust, and it's on competence. How do you rank the competence of different people?
Competence, as opposed to confidence. Competence, their ability.
Confidence is actually part of confidence, and it's interesting, the level of confidence, how it relates to your competence, because the relationship is like an upside-down U-shape. Here's what happens. If you're not confident enough, I don't think that you're competent, because I don't see that confidence. But you can be overconfident, go all the way to the other side, and now I don't trust you. I don't think that you're competent because I can see that you're making stuff up. And there is an optimal level there. So I rank them on every one of those components. One of the best components, I think, to me, which I found has an 86% correlation with trust, is shared values. The fact that we share values. And that, by the way, by itself says that trust is a relative thing, because the same behavior, my behavior, that would cause Chris here to trust me could cause you to distrust me. So when you rank people on trust, it can't be in an absolute universal way. It has to be on a one-on-one scale.
So we take it in and we assess whether it's good or bad based on our own filters.
Exactly. You know, it's easy to say this program is about lying. Lying is one of those universal absolute things, components, because would you trust somebody that knowingly, and it's important that it's knowingly, because maybe Chris doesn't know that he's lying. He really believes what he's, not really. But there is the knowingly lying to you. Would you trust someone like that? That's pretty universal. Yeah. But think about things like being a procrastinator. If you're a procrastinator, you're going to trust me for being a procrastinator, but he's not, because he likes to get the job done as early as possible. He's not going to trust me. And you can't put a good or bad on that.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I want to go back to you for an item from earlier. You were talking about, you and I were talking about entertainment and magic, both of which are scenarios where, taking Yoram's idea, we willingly, almost eagerly, say, deceive me. Make me think you're that character, or show me a trick. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, I think with magic especially, we're really interested in having someone test our abilities to see reality as it is, to see what's actually happening. And so it's very fun for us to put ourselves in situations, pretty benign situations, where someone can try to fool us.
That's a key word. Exactly. Benign situations. We're not at risk.
Right. Yeah. And it's the same reason people like to ride roller coasters. We like to place ourselves in dangerous or what feel like dangerous situations where we know that really there is very unlikely any harm could come to us.
Like trusting a bus driver.
Yes. And that brings the fact that there are different types of lies. And the word I like to use is the consequences. What are the consequences? I remember once that my family didn't tell me that my father was hospitalized because I was traveling overseas. Mm-hmm. They didn't tell me my father was hospitalized because they figured there's nothing I can do about it. I'm not going to cut my trip short. And so they didn't tell me. Now the question is, not telling me for my benefit. They didn't do that to lie. They didn't do that to deceive me. They did that to protect me. Mm-hmm. How do you react
emotionally
to that?
Protect you.
And to me, I didn't like it. You may have. Again, it goes back to the relative part of it. But you know, sometimes lie is not, I'm telling you the opposite of what is truth. I'm just not necessarily telling you everything. During COVID, I remember one morning, 6:55 a.m. in the local affiliate of one of the major networks, they said that the number of COVID cases here in Texas went down 60%. Great. 5 minutes later, that network goes at 7 a.m., goes to the national program. Mm-hmm. And in the national program, they said the number of COVID cases in the southern states, especially Texas, went up 81%. I did not touch the remote. I had to understand, how can, within the span of 5 minutes, the number of COVID cases in the same state, the state of Texas, went down 60% and up 81%. I went to the CDC data. What I found was that over the last month, it went down 60%. Over the last week, it went up 81%. They were both right. Neither one of them gave us the entire story. And to your question before, how do we react to that? You start challenging whether what you're hearing not only is the truth, but is it the whole truth?
Mm-hmm. And is it in context? So that it means something more than just the data, because the data might be just an accurate fact that tells you nothing. Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the result of lack of trust is we end up with TSA, Transportation Safety Administration, and everybody has to take their shoes off.
Right.
And then we end up with human resource rules that make it so oppressive that we can't be ourselves in many cases, okay? And other regulations. What's a better alternative, a better response to lying and deception, or is there one?
Well, I think it's unavoidable to a certain extent. You know, people might not necessarily be lying, but as Joram was pointing out, they're not always entirely honest either. And there's the costs, you know, the administrative costs that you've brought up about, you know, having to go through TSA and things like that. But
and even little kids and grandmas that obviously aren't a physical threat. Yeah, they give them the same drill.
But there's financial costs associated with being mistrustful as well. And in one study, researchers were examining people who were buying new cars. And they measured each of these participants who were about to buy a new car and asked them how distrustful were they of the car salespeople they were about to interact with. And you saw a range. Some people said, I trust this person. Other people say, I think this person's probably lying all the time. Mm-hmm. And what the researchers found was the people who were the most mistrustful actually paid $1,800 more for their cars. And their intuition about why that was.
Let me make sure we nail that down. The people who are mistrustful, the skeptics, they go into it and end up paying $1,800 more for their car.
Right. And their intuitions about why this happened was that none of us like to be called a liar. And sometimes we're called a liar with words, but sometimes just by the way someone interacts with us, it's clear they don't trust me. And when we feel like someone's not trusting us, it starts to break those bonds of cooperation. So where the salesperson may have been a little considerate and given a little bit of a discount here and there to their customer, if they felt like this person was being a jerk to them by essentially treating them as if they're liars, they gave them no deal at all, and the customers paid more.
Wow. So we went through, I mentioned this in an earlier program, went through the COVID transition and to a large extent lost FaceTime, which is a valuable, valuable learning tool to read each other. What do you need to be able to read people in a situation like that? What is it that that FaceTime gives you? Dan?
Well, I think...
it's Chris, pardon me.
Dan, that's fine. It's fine. Guest. I'll answer to anything. Yeah. well, I think the FaceTime is important, and we rely especially on ocular cues to establish people's intent. So I look in your eyes, and I can tell what you're looking at. I make some assumptions about what you're probably thinking about, what you're probably planning. And so when we start to lose that, it becomes difficult to gauge someone else's intention, which is really the foundation of trust. Mm-hmm. In order to have trust, I have to believe that your intentions are in line with my intentions. And so as that starts to fall apart, obviously we can see some repercussions in the area of trust.
And that word intention is at the core of lying, because a benign lie, as you were talking about a while ago, the intention is not there, but the intention to deceive, that's the key, right?
Right. And I wanted to touch on the question you asked. How do you stop it? Because I don't believe that government regulations or new laws will prevent you from lying.
Thank you.
Okay. And the very simple example I ask in sometimes in my workshops or keynotes, I ask people, do you ever break the law? And is the ethical bar above the legal bar? The answer is obviously yes. And so, which means that everything that's legal is not necessarily ethical, but everything that's ethical is necessarily legal. And then I ask, how many people here drive over the speed limit? And a bunch of hands, if not 90% of the hands, go up. And I ask, but wait, so you consider it ethical because obviously you're not afraid to raise your hand here, which, by the way, I don't understand why you're confessing to me, but that is illegal. Mm-hmm. But to your question, how do you stop it? Here's an interesting thing that I found, and I coined one of my 8 laws of trust on that. The trust is reciprocal, and it's reciprocal not necessarily in terms of you're trustworthy, therefore I'll trust you, but if I trust you, and I show you that I trust you, you will behave in a more trustworthy way. Because otherwise, think about the cognitive dissonance that you're going to feel knowing that I trust you and you don't believe that you deserve or earn that trust. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be more trustworthy simply because I trust you. And that, Chris, is exactly what you described with buying a car. If I am trustful, I will force you to be trustworthy. If I'm distrustful, what's the point?
Yeah, why bother living up to higher standards if they aren't held?
If they don't care, if they're still not going to
trust
me.
That says a lot about parenting, a lot about leadership and management of other people.
And kind of tying in this idea that Yoram's discussing, when we trust people, it's not necessarily that we trust them to be honest. What we're trusting is that they'll be cooperative with us, that they'll treat us fairly. Yeah. And what we see in our research is people will often trust someone more if those people are cooperative, even if they lie, and they trust them less if they, for example, say very painful things that happen to be true. And so we're not really interested in someone who will be truthful with us all the time. We're interested in someone who will cooperate with us.
And be predictable. That's another part. We trust someone. We know that we can't trust them with everything, but we know that they're predictable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you observe them over time and you see the same pattern, then you know that that's likely to be the next pattern, right?
We don't like surprises.
Yeah, predictability and dependability goes along with that, doesn't mm-hmm. it? Yeah. So you raised a question, Yoram, about the reasons that other people don't trust other people, and you brought one up that I hadn't thought of before. The question of...
Oh, yes,
the
definitely.
Reason they're lying?
You know, we think about... Why am I lying? I'm lying because I'm a bad person and because I'm a liar and therefore I just lie to everyone. From my own experience, I had people lie to me left and right for no other reason than I was a leader. I was a boss. I wouldn't even call myself a leader. I was a boss that doesn't like to get bad news. And if you're in those shoes, if you're about to deliver some bad news to someone that you know is not going to take it very well, You are going to lie even if you're not a liar. And the problem is not you. The problem is me. One of the best examples I use with that is research showed, not mine, before me, that there is a 76% correlation between the level of trust and the level of employee engagement. That's one of the key phrases for human resources department, employee engagement. We do employee engagement surveys once, twice, three, four times a year. And one thing that I showed them is, sure, if the level of trust is zero, then the level of employee engagement is going to be zero if there is a 76% correlation. But when you run the survey, you're going to find that the level of employee engagement, their reported level of employee engagement, is way higher than zero. Why is it? They don't trust you. They don't trust that the survey is anonymous. Ooh. And they don't trust that there are not going to be any consequences to them by giving you the answer that's real, that you need to hear, rather than the answer that they think you want to hear. So really, there is an interesting relationship. As trust is low, level of reported employee engagement, the level of employee engagement is low, but the level of reported employee engagement is high. Does that mean that the employees are liars? They're not liars inherently. They're liars because of the situation. They're liars because of who reads their answers to the survey. And so I tell
the implications of a lie or of the truth would be, right?
Exactly. Of telling you what you need to hear rather than what I think you want to hear.
And that gets us into another aspect of this, is being bluntly open about your thoughts and feelings. Is that being truthful? Or is that just being rude?
Right. Well, it's both. And that's the reason why most of us aren't entirely honest all the time. We withhold information. We use vague language. We use misleading language. We exaggerate. We minimize. And we do all these things because, again, getting back to cooperation, I am your friend. I want to have this bond with you. And I know that these bonds are forged through having shared interests, shared goals, and a shared sense of caring. And if you're saying harmful, painful, truthful things to me, it suggests that maybe you don't really care about how I feel, and it starts
even
to break
that trust.
Even if
it's a hard truth.
Exactly.
Yeah, does this coffee mug make me look fat?
yes, it does.
Thank you.
We went through the part that I came from Israel and we're very direct. But you know, in my research, one of the things that I found too is that the level of creativity and productivity in a team, in a company, correlates to the ability to hold what I call a constructive disagreement. So you asked about being direct. There's being direct, there is being disrespectful. And those are not the same things. Being direct, you're able, because the level of trust, and it, again, it's a reciprocal relationship between trust and the ability to hold a constructive disagreement. Constructive disagreement is where I can be vulnerable with you and not have to worry.
Yeah.
That goes up to 140% when the level of trust is high. It's
really
my ability to give you feedback, the feedback that you need to hear, not what I think you want to hear, that goes up 106%. My willingness to accept your feedback goes up 76% when trust is high. But the alternatives to this constructive disagreement, on one hand, you get the destructive disagreement. This is when, instead of being direct, I'm being blunt, I'm being disrespectful. There is another side to that. And unfortunately, we see more and more of that. And that's the politically correct disagreement. Mm. This is where I tell you what you want to hear. This is where we have the meeting before the meeting after the meeting, just not the meeting during the meeting. And that's not leading to creativity and productivity either.
Yeah, and the truth is going to come out sooner or later. Right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Lying is a good short-term strategy sometimes. Never a good long-term strategy. Because I think it was you that were telling me that you're going to be found out sooner or later. Right?
Well, you're going to be found out. And really, the degree to which people will cooperate with us hinges on the degree to which they can trust us.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime we're lying or even not being fully truthful with people, you know, they make a mark on the ledger. Here's another example where this person wasn't straightforward with me, where they prioritize their own wants and needs above my own. And so we're always managing our reputation, and a key element of our reputations is how trustworthy we are.
Yep.
And the score catches up to us. If people are lying, the score is going to catch up.
If we lose trust, if there's been an event or a pattern that just broke the trust bond, can it be restored?
I think it can. And you know, I look at it from both sides, from the side of the person who told the lie. The first thing is you stop digging. You dug a hole. Stop digging. You were caught on a lie.
Yeah.
Own it. Ask forgiveness. Admit to it. Right. Ask forgiveness. Promise that you're not going to do it again. And for God's sake, don't do it again. Because just like Chris said, I just marked a line here. The level of trust, by the way, I like to think that it's like three times, not necessarily an accurate number. You will lose trust, or I will lose trust in you three times faster if you lied than how much trust I'm going to put in you for not lying.
Yeah.
Right.
So you can lose a lot more. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, I think to his point, we have, if we're trying to rebuild trust, what we find is that as far as like the long term, making promises, asking forgiveness, apologizing doesn't really seem to help, because through lying to people, what we've shown them is that our words are essentially meaningless. They're not useful predictors.
Yeah.
And so what we find is in the long term, engaging in trustworthy behavior is the key. And so words don't seem to matter. Put it into action.
There you go. That's beautiful. And that's a great place for us to wrap this together. I really appreciate both of you and the time you've put into this, not only on camera, but also in our chats beforehand. So thank you very much, Dr. Christian Hart.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you, you bet. And Dr. Yoram Solomon.
Thank you, Jim.
So there are lies we agree to. There are lies we are deceived by. There are even lies we bring upon ourselves. All of us do it, and we need to be more conscientious about it. We've seen some of the personal costs and societal costs of lying and how to reduce the lies and increase the trust in our lives. As always, we are here for you to explore new points of view, because on McQuestion TV, perspectives matter. We're talking about things that matter with people who care.
I hope this was interesting to you. As I said before, this episode was produced by McQuestion TV, which is the longest-running independently produced program on KERA, Channel 13, and PBS, with 1 million viewers annually. It is a 501c3 organization that has the mission of educating and informing the public using television and video with relevant, thought-provoking perspectives and content by talking about things that matter with people who care. You can watch this episode and more on www.mcquestiontv.com. And once again, I posted a link in the podcast description. That's it for today. May trust be with you. This was The Trust Show. What would you like to know about trust and trustworthiness? Let me know and I'll answer it in a future episode. I would love to hear from you. Email me at yoram@thetrustshow.com. If you like this episode, subscribe to the show so you will automatically get notified when I release a new episode. Rate it. Write a review for this podcast, because those ratings help not only you, but also others looking for podcasts just like this. If you're looking for more resources to learn about how to build trust, be trusted, or know who to trust, look up my workshops, online courses, books, or go to my website, trusthabits.com. And remember that the answer to these two questions will have the biggest impact on your personal and professional success or failure. Can I trust you? And can you trust me? Thank you for listening or watching The Trust Show.